This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. These are noisy times we live in. So much news to listen to and read, so many emails from work and notifications on your phone, and that Netflix binge you were planning, and that music playlist you were tweaking. Entertaining, engaging, yeah, but so very noisy. Now, staying plugged in is important, but it is easy to let our need for connection give way to a fear of disconnection. Perhaps the key to surviving our crazy world is knowing how to shut it out from time to time, not just by listening to something else, but maybe by listening to nothing. Silence. What does it take these days to truly find silence? And not just silence, but stillness, audibly and mentally. Joining us from NPR in New York is Erling Karga, a Norwegian explorer and publisher and the author of the new book, Silence in the Age of Noise. Erling Karga, welcome to 1A.
Thank you.
Also at NPR in New York is Daniel A. Gross, a writer and public radio producer. He's interviewed dozens of researchers in neuroscience and biology about what we want to talk about and how we feel about silence. Daniel, welcome.
It's great to be here.
We'd love to hear from you, too. Tell us about where you find silence and stillness in your daily life. Are you craving it, or maybe you have just kind of learned to adapt without it? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@wamu.org. Daniel Gross, let me start with you. I feel like this topic very easily can become very transcendental and metaphysical and kind of thoughts for your thoughts, but science has found that there are actual quantifiable benefits to silence. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that's true. The research seems to start with Florence Nightingale, the famous British nurse. And I dug up an old quote from her from the 1800s. She said, "Unnecessary noise is the most cruel absence of care that can be inflicted on sick or well." So that quote, along with some other things, it got me thinking about whether the opposite is also true. If noise can be inflicted, then can silence actually make us healthier in some way? It's not immediately obvious that that's the case, but there are some fascinating findings that suggest some kind of effect of silence. One is that the WHO, the World Health Organization, found that Europeans lose a lot of healthy years due to the stress that comes from living in noisy environments. WHO argues that 3,000 heart disease deaths actually result from loud environments. And basically the process is that when you're around noise all the time, your stress hormones go up and you end up walking around more stressed and sort of with elevated blood pressure. That can lead to heart disease.
So we're not just talking about someone who heard a loud noise and they were startled and that stopped their heart. You're talking about consistent, just the steady drip of stress hormones, of cortisol, in your bloodstream all the time.
Exactly.
Erling Karga, let's talk some about your travels. I wonder how much of that became motivated by a search for silence. I mean, you've traveled the world. As I understand, you're the first person ever to have walked alone to the South Pole, 50 days trekking across Antarctica. How much of your exploration has been motivated by this search for solitude and stillness and silence?
You know, I'm motivated by that every day. I like the social life, but you definitely also need silence. So walking to the South Pole 50 days and nights under the midnight sun kind of made me understand how silence also can enrich your lives, and also that it's not a new fad, it's not a trend, it's something deeply human that we have needed for thousands of years and will need it in the future. But problem, of course, today, it's so much more noise, not only in the sense of sounds, but in the sense of expectations, distractions, visual noise, etc., etc. So that's why I think, you know, for me as a Norwegian, it was natural just to go to desolated places, into the forest, mountains, walking to the poles, experience silence, and be reminded about the fact that your brain can be wider than the sky.
Now, I imagine you could have chosen to take a helicopter to the South Pole. You're not the first person to reach the South Pole. What motivated you to walk it?
I think it's important in life sometimes, not all the time, sometimes to make life more difficult than necessary. And I think that's, you know, also relevant to noise and silence. Noise will always be the easiest solution in life, because then you live through your devices, you live through other people. While in silence, you're going to get to know yourself, and that's always more difficult.
Do you consider yourself a naturally quiet person, or is this something that you've had to kind of learn to appreciate?
No, I had to learn to appreciate it. When I was a kid, I felt silence was about being lonely, not having anyone to play with, being sad. But then, you know, then life moves on. When I look at my 15-year-old daughter, she still thinks silence is the waste. But when I talk to my 21-year-old daughter, she has started to appreciate silence. And she sees the ridiculousness with Googling something, you find what you're looking for, and 20 minutes later, you're still Googling.
Daniel, what about that? I'm kind of glad you brought that up. I want to be clear about what we're talking about. And Daniel, I presume in the research that you studied, we're talking about silence and stillness rather than loneliness, which is something different, not just pure solitude with a negative emotional connotation, right?
Yeah, I think it is important to distinguish between this kind of sensation of silence or this inner sense of silence and the actual absence of sound. And one problem is that in a lot of research, there isn't a clear distinction between these two things. So silence pops up in a lot of scientific studies as a control. So you might be studying the effects of music or the effects of noise, and you use silence as your baseline. And so it's rare that someone actually turns their attention to the question of the absence of noise, precisely, I think, because we think of it as something missing, not as something to appreciate or to benefit from.
We're speaking to Daniel Gross, a writer and public radio producer based in New York, and Erling Karga, Norwegian explorer and the author of Silence in the Age of Noise. And we also want to read from you, if not hear from you. We are talking about silence, after all. So we welcome reading your comments about your search for silence, for stillness. Where do you go to find solitude? Or for that matter, are you the kind of person who is just crazy when it's quiet? Is this whole silence thing not really clicking for you? Have you learned to deal with the din of day-to-day life and you're cool with it? Either way, email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Clearly, some of you would like a little more peace and quiet. Chuck wrote us on Facebook, "I'm looking forward to this discussion. As a young man, I thrived on all of the stimulation of my city until I took my first backpacking trip. That really exposed me to the wonder and beauty of silence. Hours of silent walking through wilderness, listening to the chatter of birds, gurgling of streams, and rustling of wildlife in the brush. Then we came upon a bald knob with a tremendous view. The wind, the sun, the view, the humility, and the lack of man-made sounds made the silence exhilarating." Erling Karga, it's interesting. Some of your exploration, as I understand it, has taken place in nature, but what Chuck is describing is not the kind of silence that you're talking about. It's just trading one set of sound, city sound, for nature sound. You've also gone looking for the absolute absence of all sonic energy. Were you able to find it?
No, and I don't think it exists, actually. It's and, you know, if it had been a totally silent place and you came there, you know, you would bring some noise with you. So I think, you know, just like Daniel said, I think, you know, and also this comment that came in, that silence surrounding you is really nice, can be very good, but it's the inner silence which is, you know, which is the most important and the most enriching. And that's the kind of silence you need to create yourself.
Yeah, the challenge of finding silence even out in nature is something that one of our listeners talked about in his voicemail from our inbox.
Hi, Joshua. This is Catalista from Ozark County, Missouri. I live in a rural situation, and many times there are no human noises. Yet, there is never silence. There is the leaves. They rustle when the wind blows through them. There might be a cricket chirping. There might be a bird flying overhead that you hear as it comes close. The only time I have ever experienced true silence is when I am underwater or in the deepest of meditation.
Hey, thanks for your voicemail, and I bet it is absolutely beautiful out there in Ozark County. Daniel Gross, what do we know about what happens in the brain when we experience science? When we experience silence.
Let me give you a taste of some of the conversations I had with scientists. One of the researchers I spoke with studies the brain of mice. And she, like a lot of other scientists, stumbled upon silence as a control. So she was studying the effects of music, the effects of baby mouse calls, and the effects of silence on these mice.
I'm sorry, you see baby mouse calls?
Yeah.
What does a baby mouse sound like?
That's a great question. I won't try any imitations on the air, but I think the idea was that adult mice would be very attuned to the sounds of baby mice because they might have to take care of those baby mice.
Okay.
So this researcher, Imke Kirsta at Duke, found that the short-term effects of music and of baby mouse calls were noticeable, but the bigger effect and a long-term effect resulted from the silence. And in her study, which we should notice is only on mice, so you know it's not clear that this is really meaningful, but she found that there was increased cell development in the brain for those mice that were listening to silence. Now, just to give you a taste of another interesting twist, there was an Italian researcher that I spoke to, Luciano Bernardi, and he was studying music and its relaxing effect. There are types of music, of course, slow music, that can lead us to sort of a decreased level of stress. But Bernardi found that silence had a greater effect than relaxing music when it appeared as a break in music. So the music stops and suddenly we relax. Maybe our mind sort of no longer needs to grasp the melody and can therefore relax.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Another one of our listeners wrote, the Japanese have a term, shinrin yuku. It translates as forest bathing, referring to their practice of being in the woods to be surrounded by the peace, solitude, and the energy exuded by the plants, using it to soothe one's mind and physical health. It works for me when I'm feeling frazzled, and I highly recommend it to everyone. A lot of you go out into nature to find a sense of silence. Chris emailed, I'm an avid rock climber. I'm a day trip away from Red River Gorge in Kentucky, some of the best climbing in the country. The silence I seek there isn't physical silence, however, although there is plenty of that there as well. I seek mental silence. When you're climbing, your mind is focused entirely on the body. All the screaming anxieties and mental jabbering that goes on in my head is all washed away as I find myself 100% in that exact moment. As I try to navigate my way safely up a vertical rock face, I always leave physically exhausted but mentally reinvigorated. Erling Karga, I wonder if that maybe is wrapped up in some of your explorations around the world. I mean, walking to the South Pole, there's nothing else you can focus on but that walk. Is that part of what you derive from it, that mental silence?
Absolutely. And also in daily life, in the sense that if you're thinking too much, you're thinking about the past or you're thinking about the future, that's a kind of noise too. And of course, you have to do it. But I find, you know, the same kind of mental silence also. If I walk in the streets, even in the city, the reason people are knitting in Norway has this huge wave that people are knitting. The chopping wood, the brewing beer. This is also about silence. It's about shutting off the world. And, you know, when I do the dishes at home, nobody will disturb me. So then I also find some inner silence. So I think, you know, you can find it anywhere.
I wonder, Daniel, if there's any research that you've stumbled upon that has to do with that kind of mental silence or a sense of oneness. I mean, I can kind of relate to what Chris emailed. I've never been rock climbing, but, you know, I'm an avid gym goer. And even if I've got music on in my headphones and I'm on the elliptical machine, everything goes away. I'm on one wavelength at a time, even though there is sound around me.
Yeah, I think one of the fascinating things that we all experience is that we're able to feel silence when it's loud out, and we're able to feel that there are loud kind of noises, even in silence, because of all these notifications and all of the news and the things that buzz around your head. One researcher that I spoke to was Marcus Reichle, who's his big discovery was that when there's no sensory input, when there's nothing coming into the brain, there's still a huge amount of brain activity. And he calls this the default mode. It's kind of the mental noise that's going on even when there's nothing to distract you. And that actually takes up the majority of the energy of the human brain. So we know both from this type of research and from, you know, everyday experience that we're capable of having an incredibly active, noisy mind, even when there's nothing to actually come into our ears.
Aaron in Durham, North Carolina, liked my Thoughts for Your Thoughts reference. And if you don't get the reference, people, Parks and Recreation, come on. Aaron emailed, is it possible to move silence, quote unquote, from a question about personal fulfillment and health to a larger question about the clustering of society? In other words, how does silence help us rethink the promises of the big city, social media, the internet, etc., to connect us? Erling, what do you think?
I think, you know, you need both. We're born social beings, but just today it's simply too much. Man has always had a problem sitting by himself or herself doing nothing. But today, due to smartphones, etc., it has changed quite dramatically. And I think, you know, it's being in a city, I think it's impossible. It's important to be aware that to search for silence every now and then is not about living a more egocentric life or turning your back to the world. It's rather the opposite. It's about recognizing people. It's about opening up, and it's about loving life even more.
Do you find some cities do a better job of encouraging this kind of silence than others?
Yes, but you know, even in New York City, you can find silence if you walk one direction in 20 minutes, you will come to a quiet place. But I think, you know, even in the metro, you can find some inner silence, some inner peace.
I liked Aaron's question about social media and the internet regarding silence. And still to come, we'll hear from someone who is helping other people use technology and smartphones to get the silence that they need. We're speaking with explorer Erling Karga, the author of Silence in the Age of Noise, and writer and public radio producer Daniel Gross. We look forward to hearing from you too. Don't be silent about where you find stillness. Share your insights with us. 1A@WAMU.org. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Erling Karga and Daniel A. Gross about the search for silence. Andy tweeted, I used to run a semi-anechoic sound chamber intended to test industrial machinery. Sitting inside, the lack of sound was deafening. Daniel, I don't know if you are familiar with these anechoic chambers, these like super sound insulated chambers supposedly are able to kind of suck sonic energy away from you that you can like hear your pulse and the bones in your neck when you move your head. What are these? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, a little bit. I used to live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and one of the earliest anechoic chambers was built there. I suppose the story about them is that they were built to be incredibly silent. And from a physical standpoint, that might be the case. There's no sound waves bouncing around inside them. But human beings are creatures that make noises. And one of the things you hear inside the anechoic chambers, the story goes, is your own blood rushing through your body. And of course, your breathing, the motion of the body, these all generate sounds that we feel through our bodies instead of through our ears.
Wow, that's got to be a very uncomfortable kind of silence.
It must be. I've never done it.
If anyone out there listening has ever been in an anechoic chamber, I would love to know what it was like if you've been in there. Go ahead and tweet it to us at 1A or email 1A@WAMU.org. Well, one of the noisiest parts of our daily lives is our smartphone. But joining us now on the line from Santa Monica is Rich Pearson. He's the CEO and co-founder of Headspace, which is a smartphone meditation app that offers guided and unguided meditations. Rich Pearson, welcome to 1A.
Hi there, Joshua. Nice to meet you.
So good to meet you as well. Meditation by smartphone? How does that work?
Well, it's as simple as opening up the app and pressing play, and we guide you through a guided meditation. And it starts off with as short as 3 minutes, and it builds all the way up to as long as 60 minutes. And we kind of take you through and hold your hand to teach you the basics of mindfulness.
What are some of the basics of mindfulness that you go through in the app?
Well, the first thing is really just trying to create an anchor around your breath. So we use the breath as the focus of meditation, and it's just leading people through that exercise. And I think, you know, as you've been talking about, silence is actually a really difficult thing for most people to sit with because they don't have that experience so often in their life. So actually that's where the guided voice and my, you know, my other co-founder, Andy, used to be a Tibetan Buddhist monk. He leads you through those exercises.
Did you meditate? Did you have any kind of silence daily practices before you created Headspace?
No, I was, I used to be in advertising, so the complete opposite of silence.
The noisiest job possible.
The noisiest job, creating the most noise. I think this is my karmic payback. No, I think, no, I didn't at all. And that's kind of why I found meditation. I was having a really tough time mentally, and I was suffering from acute anxiety when I met Andy. And so I was pretty desperate to learn anything that could help me with my kind of mental state, to be honest.
Was it anxiety from your career or just life in general? I don't mean to get too much in your business, but
no,
I'm just curious as to where that came from.
No, I'm happy to share. No, I think it was definitely from work, but I think it was also from just a deeper level of dissatisfaction with kind of how my life was going. And I just didn't know quite how to deal with those questions or those feelings. And I think it's quite easy to distract yourself from those things. But when I was quite young, I was about 26, and I just kind of hit a breaking point. And that's when I quit my job, and I kind of went on a bit of a search to try and find some answers.
We're speaking to Rich Pearson, the CEO and co-founder of the meditation app Headspace. Rich, why a guided meditation? You know, a lot of our conversation has been about silence and stillness. Why not just get a good pair of, you know, Bose noise-canceling earbuds and turn it on and go foop and shut out all the sound and just sit quietly for 10 minutes?
I don't know how many, I don't know if you've done that, Joshua, but my experience of doing that is that my mind still talks at me, even with my Bose noise cancelling headphones on. So I think it's learning that skill of having a different relationship with our thinking and our thoughts. And I think the more that we can look at our thoughts as not necessarily real, and we can observe them without getting too involved in them, I think that's what we do most of the time all day long, which is trying to chase after the thoughts that we like and trying to push away the thoughts that we don't like. And so I think the skill of meditation, and it is a skill, is to train you to have that different relationship with those thoughts. And so the guided meditation really is a way to train you. And our hope is that people then can go and practice being in silence more. And our content does get more silence as you kind of go through the course and the program. So our hope is that it teaches you to be able to sit in silence in a more skillful and considered way.
Dave wrote us on Facebook, I start and end each day meditating to the Headspace app. It teaches me to isolate and manage unwelcome noise and stress. The rest of the day, I crank the tunes, or NPR, as I drive to distant locations in my semi-truck. Rich, is that the kind of feedback that you've gotten from users? What are they telling you about Headspace?
Yeah, I think the amazing thing about a meditation practice is that you define what it is for you. And we've got people that are professional athletes. We work with the Lakers, and they use it for their kind of getting the edge in their kind of NBA kind of dreams and aspirations. We have mums that use it just to kind of get through the stresses of, you know, being a new mother, as well as people that are suffering from terminal illnesses. You know, we got a beautiful email the other day of how a daughter and a mother who was dying of cancer, and how they kind of used Headspace together in her last days, and how it brought peace to her mother. So from very deep and very personal reasons through to, I just kind of want to focus more. I think people define how they use their practice. I think that's kind of brilliant. And the fact that a semi-truck driver is using Headspace makes me incredibly happy, to be honest.
I've got to say, Rich, before we let you go, I've not had the pleasure of using Headspace just yet. But my concern with my phone, because I need it to breathe nowadays and for my heart to beat, is notifications. Does Headspace mute notifications so I can just focus on meditation?
If you turn on the Headspace notifications, what you'll find is that they are mindful moments to hopefully give you something of use that you can reflect upon. So our hope is that they're very useful rather than use it now.
That's I don't mean that. I don't mean the notifications from Headspace. I mean, I'm using Headspace, my notification from Slack telling me that a script is ready and from NPR News saying that somebody else has been, you know, fired for sexual harassment, all that other stuff.
That's the magic of airplane mode. I would highly recommend when you do your Headspace to put it on airplane mode.
Rich Pearson is the CEO and co-founder of the smartphone app Headspace. Rich, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much.
Daniel, what have you found in terms of your research? Has any of your research, any of your study involved the role of technology in fostering silence other than, say, just noise-canceling headphones?
Yes. Certainly, one of the kind of unintended consequences of our louder society is that companies start to market silence. Countries start to market it. Finland started marketing silence. And of course, Bose, you know, is selling silence to us when they offer those types of headphones. But in this story that I wrote for Nautilus magazine, the thing that actually delighted me the most was the way that each of the researchers developed their own relationship to silence. A couple of the researchers I spoke to were people who meditate. One of them was Skyping with me, and in the middle of the conversation, he turned around his computer out the window. And there was this, you know, expanse of trees and meadow. And this was someone who researches in New York City. And this was his little haven that he'd found for himself.
Let me get to a few more of your comments as we continue our conversation with Daniel Gross and Erling Karga. Rajiv tweeted us, how important is religion when it comes to attaining silence and stillness? Is it important? Erling Karga, what have you found in your travels in terms of the intersection between religion and silence, or religion and stillness?
I think, you know, it's hard to be an atheist if you spend a lot of time in nature. And also if you read, you know, Eastern religions and also the Bible, it's very much about silence. It says that, you know, you have all this noise, but when eventually God appears, it's in silence. So in Norway, we had a saying that you have to choose. Are you going to sit inside a church on a Sunday and think about the nature outside? Are you going to make a walk in the nature and think about God?
It's interesting you bring that up. I mean, you're right. There are a number of, I was raised Christian, a number of Bible verses that equate God with silence. You know, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent, or be still and know that I am God. Is there any, Daniel, what about you? Is there any evidence to suggest that maybe people who have a particular spiritual path or have a spiritual path experience silence differently or stillness differently?
There has been some neurological research on people who meditate, and there is something interesting going on. I think the jury's still out on exactly what that is, exactly how this type of focus and sort of quiet in the mind manifests. But it is really interesting that many of the scientists who are also meditators are looking for scientific language, I think, to express intuitions that they feel. And they're trying to ground those everyday experiences that they have in physiological facts and neurological facts. And that process is still ongoing. I think there's still lots of discoveries about silence waiting to be found. But that I think is at the core of a lot of these researchers' approaches. They're looking for that language.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Dan in Silver Spring, Maryland, not far from here, emailed, a lot of our disquietude may come from an increased need to constantly have something to say, a comment, a judgment, or a story to share. The internet has too long didn't read for a reason. That's that TLDR you might see at the top of an article. Too many people try to fill others up with constantly expressed thinking. It is too often just mental noise. David in Louisville, Kentucky tweeted, what about using noise to find your inner silence? I find my mind is most clear when there is noise of my choosing. Erling, what about that?
Yeah, I have the same experience. I think, you know, sometimes it's hard to find the silence we're talking about. And then, you know, I can turn on music, have loud music and shut out the rest of the world and then, you know, find an inner silence. I think that's, but you know, it's man has always had a problem to relate to silence. It's nothing new, and I think you can turn to science, but I mean, if you just look around, look at people who's always connected, always, you know, they look very frustrated, they look unhappy. You know, all this technology was used to make our lives much better, but now it seems like, you know, it doesn't.
I wonder about that other aspect of the comment we just read in terms of always having something to say. You know, I sometimes wonder if people who are constantly looking for something to say, and I talk for a living, so guilty as charged, but if people who are constantly looking for something to say are kind of uncomfortable with the silence in their ears, between their ears, in their head, or in their heart, they're just not ready to be silent in themselves because it's too reflective. Erling, do you find sometimes in those moments of silence, you have to look at yourself in deep ways that maybe you don't like?
Absolutely. I mean, the silence hurts. And in the silence, you're going to get to know yourself. And of course, sometimes that's beautiful, that's interesting, but it could also be frustrating and devastating to get to know yourself better.
We also got a number of comments from some of you, like what we got from Joyce in Indianapolis. Joyce emailed, "I would love to experience silence again. I have tinnitus. While I can appreciate silent environments, yet they don't match my most memorable moment before it started. I too have meditated to quiet my mind. Of course, it's easier if my physical environment is quiet, but I have meditated while waiting in restaurants and even once next to a fountain outside the Native American Museum in Washington, D.C. Let me get to one more voicemail that came into our inbox.
This is Jim from Paducah, Kentucky. As a retired individual, I've become a produce grower, and as a result, I spend a great deal of time by myself in a remote garden setting, period. Those sounds which were once part of silence for me have become part of my daily routine, to include birds, the rustling of leaves, coyotes howling. They're wonderful.
Sounds wonderful, Jim. Thanks very much for calling in. Daniel, to go back to Joyce's comment, what about people who have physical challenges with silence? I don't know if you've had a chance to get into any of the research on that, but I imagine there are people like Joyce who physically just can't experience that kind of almost anechoic silence like someone who doesn't have tinnitus would experience.
Yeah, that's a comment that actually came up a lot when I published this story with Nautilus. Many of the commenters wrote, "I read about silence and I'm envious because I have tinnitus." And I feel incredible compassion for that struggle because listening is a big part of my life. I'm a radio producer for much of my work. I think that what Joyce's comment highlights, though, is the distinction between mental silence and silence that we cultivate inside and the kind of silence of the ears. And it sounds like Joyce has through incredible effort, cultivated a kind of peace that I'm impressed by. I mean, that's something that you can train your mind to get closer to, even when you have tinnitus, it sounds like.
Erling, before we run out of time, I wonder if in your exploration of silence, which is fascinating, that you found maybe a new appreciation for noise or sound. Do you ever sometimes feel like just kind of flipping the balance and saying, I got to crank it up and just blast my favorite whatever it is?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're born that way. So we need both. We both need all this noise and blast away. But we also need this inner silence, this mental silence.
What do you do to crank it up, to make for when you're looking for a little more noise?
Would you like to have it live on radio?
Well, no, I don't
want you to... Norwegian way to blast.
I don't need you to scare my listeners, but can you describe it to us?
Yeah, you know, I'm a very social guy. I mean, I like to eat and drink and party and meet people and hang out. And, you know, it's a bit of neutral worlds, but, you know, live a bit crazy life, for sure. But then, you know, the alternative is also really good.
Erling Karga, a Norwegian explorer whose new book is called Silence in the Age of Noise. Erling, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
And Daniel Gross, writer and public radio producer. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Joshua.
Remember, when you're tired of a little silence, you're welcome to listen to the 1A podcast. You can subscribe on the NPR One app or whatever app you like. If you're new to podcasts, you'll find all the links to listen at npr.org/1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.